Well, good afternoon, Michigan. This is Jeff Donofrio, President and CEO of Business Leaders from Michigan, sitting in for Paul W. Smith. I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Goldberg, President and CEO of DFCU Financial. Ryan, great to be here with you.
Jeff, it's my pleasure. I've enjoyed getting to know you before the show and really value the great things that you're doing for Business Leaders from Michigan.
Well, as a customer, I'm glad to be sitting next to the bank president. You'll give me some insights, I'm sure. We are here today at the Detroit Economic Club inside the Soundboard Theater at Motor City Casino. We're going to be joined by a great group of people as guests today. Specifically today, it's the Michigan Economic Outlook Lunch. This is great. I did this myself a couple years ago as a panelist. We talk about what to expect over the next year, and we'll hear from those panelists in just a little bit. But joining us now is the wonderful Rachel Stewart, CEO of Gardner White Furniture. Rachel's had a pretty busy year. Rachel, thanks for joining.
Glad to be here.
Well, Rachel, you've had a lot of news this year. Besides being the premier sponsor of the parade, making sure that folks get in the door and that hopefully the Lions get a Super Bowl win every year, you've opened up a store downtown right here in Woodward in Detroit. You're expanding throughout the state. Talk about what's happening at Gardner White.
Sure. It was a busy and exciting year. I think we opened, six stores in 6 months. So it kept us busy. We kicked it off with the Detroit store in June. So that was really exciting and sort of kept rolling from there, both throughout the state and with a different format with a mattress store in Brighton. So it's never boring. We'll keep going in 26. I think the most important thing we've done is really solidify and professionalize our team so that we're poised to grow in the future. And I think one of the most exciting things for me has been watching people move to Detroit. You know, you have national talent moving to Detroit, and now you just show them the city, and it's such a selling asset, which is awesome.
Absolutely. I look at that store downtown and the Hudson's building across the street, which we were both in for breakfast this morning.
Right.
You feel the energy, right?
Oh, it's spectacular. And it's amazing just, as more and more is happening down there, in particular, GM moving in there today, I see it in our sales figures, right? It's really exciting. The model works.
Rachel, good afternoon. This is Ryan. It's a pleasure
Hey, Ryan.
To be with you. One of the things from a financial services perspective is we're always looking at the health of the consumer. Today's
Sure.
discussion is focused on Michigan's economic outlook. What would you say were your observations around the strength of the holiday season, consumer behaviors, and then the future outlook for retail, specifically your furniture industry?
Sure. Well, our sector is a little different. I mean, we all read about it, but it was really true with the pull forward during COVID. So what I mean is that, we were home forever, and it seems like never left, so demand was really pulled forward, so we saw a lot of growth. And then, post-COVID, as people could finally leave their homes, it was quiet throughout the whole industry. So I think, we're a little sort of off sync with the rest of, I would say, retail and others. Because I think we're finally, we're emerging in what I think will be an up year in 26, which of course we always like to see. I mean, I think we're obviously really closely watching consumer confidence, because I think that's, we're worried about that. And I think I'm also really worried about the K economy and just affordability writ large. It was funny on affordability, I was looking at some of our old ads. And somehow we've managed to keep a sofa advertised at $399 since the 70s. I was looking at old ad with my grandmother. So I know we hear a lot about affordability. I'm not necessarily seeing it from where I sit, but I think our supply chains have evolved to such an extent, that's why.
How closely are you tied to the mortgage market? I would think from a
Sure.
furniture sales perspective, people buying and moving creates a revenue stream, but even folks that are staying in their same homes and remodeling and wanting to, brighten up where they currently live if they're not moving. It's encouraging mortgage rates are under 6 for the first time in a while. But how do you think about that?
So, I mean, certainly you can see it in the data that, when people are either buying homes or moving and building homes, remodeling homes, moving homes, renting new homes, there's usually a six-month lag between a lot of action there and a sales pickup. across the country. So we certainly see it. And, you know, we obviously watch what's happening in rates really closely.
Rachel, you know, that I think that's important and a good maybe pivot to say, you know, how are we doing in Michigan? What's your sense of, you know, how competitive we are? It's great that you're able to, you know, continue to provide value and quality furniture at $399. You know, when you look at what, you know, our economic outlook is, when you look at how we grow in the future, what do you think the state needs to do?
I mean, I think, you know, I've been really active in Business Leaders for Michigan, and that's because I believe in the cause, right? I think there's a few issues that we really need to nail, you know, first and foremost being education throughout the state, and second being economic development. You know, it's concerning that you see states passing us by. But I guess the upside in that is that there's models, proven models that we know work. And we just have to pick the best ones that are going to make the most sense in our state and implement them, but implement them in a way that has some longevity to it, because nothing is easy, right?
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, you look at the Mississippi miracle, what it took 11, 12 years of policy stability, but at the same time, Mississippi went from, what, 49th in fourth grade literacy to 9th. So we know this works. You know, this is where we need to go, but we need to create the environment that's going to make this a reality.
So when we talk to, and I know through Business Leaders from Michigan and in your own conversations, you're talking to a lot of candidates who are running for office and you know, trying to set their platform. You know, what would you tell them right now as, you know, if you got to be laser focused on something, you know, and how to implement it, what needs to happen?
It's everything we talk about. Education, economic development, and really affordability are the important things. But I think the harder part of that is doing it in a way that's cohesive, bipartisan, and that is going to stick beyond 4 years. Easier said than done, but I think, you know, start building those coalitions now. And if you look, there's mostly unanimity generally around those policies, as there should be. You know, these are proven models from both red and blue states doing pretty much the same thing and getting results. So I think, you know, I think I'm excited about the work that Business Leaders for Michigan does, because I think we'll create some of that cohesion now. And then I think it's incumbent on the governor to pull that forward into his or her next term.
So pick a strategy, stick with it, execute on it, you know, continuously, right? Those are the things that states have done over and over again that have been successful. Rachel, you know, any parting thoughts for us on maybe what 2026 is going to bring? Is it a Super Bowl win? Is it something else?
I mean, as the official furniture matches partner of our Detroit Lions, I'm always hoping for a Super Bowl win. but I also think, I mean, I will say the Lions are an amazing partner in so many ways. And when they say they want to be a community partner and be active, that's not lip service. It's really genuine. So, you know, I would love if they could bring us a winning season, but I also am grateful for all they do and just the economic development that we're seeing in the city because we now have a winning team, which I'm excited about.
Well, Rachel Stewart, that's going to have to be the last word from you. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to that winning Lions season this fall. This is Jeff Donofrio, President and CEO of Business Leaders from Michigan, alongside Ryan Goldberg, President and CEO of DFCU Financial, live from the Detroit Economic Club. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, and I'm here again with Ryan Goldberg, my co-host. This is Jeff Donofrio, President and CEO of Business Leaders from Michigan. Ryan, of course, is the CEO of DFCU Financial, and we're joined by a great guy, a leader in the automotive industry and throughout Michigan, Ron Hall, CEO of Bridgewater Interiors. Ron, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Ron, it's great to have you. You've built an impressive company, and as we know, we're at the Detroit Economic Club today for a big day. Curious if you'd start us off in this part of the discussion with just your economic outlook for Michigan, business climate, domestically, internationally. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, my focus is almost exclusively domestic because our firm is not an international firm. I think that most of the forecasts I'm seeing are that North American automotive production is going to be down 200,000 to 400,000 units this year, year over year. And as a result, in our projections at the company, you know, we're expecting, you know, a flat to maybe even slightly down year, depending upon how it goes here throughout. I think the automotive industry has largely stabilized, at least in North America, from what I would describe as, you know, the shock of tariffs beginning last spring. And while I think that some of the cost of tariffs will begin to roll through and show up in the stickers on cars at retail, you know, April time frame, I think that for suppliers like us, at least I'm hopeful that the worst is behind us and that it's going to be a more stable year in that regard.
One of the things we're looking at in the financial services industry is the impact of the up to $10,000 in interest tax deduction for new cars and so forth. Hopefully that gives it a bit of a spur.
Hope so.
And we're watching closely in that regard
as well. Of
course.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between, you know, 16 million and 17 million units is a big deal. And the supply chain feels that. And so, yes, we will be rooting for measures that might help spur production and sales a little bit higher than currently forecast.
Ron, you know, a lot of the uncertainty that you talked about from last year really prevented folks from making decisions on CapEx investments, on new lines, hiring, those kind of things. Do you see that dam breaking a bit this year then? People are willing to take a little more risk in the industry. There's a little more certainty to say you're going to pursue a new product, what have you?
Definitely the latter. I'm like more certainty before you want to commit capital.
Yeah.
I think, you know, last year was full of enough uncertainty on that front, and there was enough damage done to firms. You know, you saw it in lots of earnings results, you know, billions and billions lost by automakers, smaller numbers but still significant ones lost by many of the suppliers. And I think that as a result of that, you know, the planning, I don't want to describe it as more careful, but yeah, I think we're a little bit tighter in terms of, you know, making go decisions with capital until we have more certainty in the immediate term.
Let's switch a bit to be more specific about Michigan. You know we face challenges, and you're a board member at Business Leaders for Michigan. You're on the Skillman board. You sit on a number of different organizations that are focused on how do we, you know, make Michigan more competitive? How do we help make sure that prosperity is widely shared? You know, we're 50th in income growth over the last 20 years. We've fallen from 16th to 44th in fourth grade reading. You know, we've spent at Business Leaders for Michigan a good part of the last year trying to come up with a plan for how to reverse some of that. You know, the cornerstone of the plan really, you know, we've talked about it being a couple of different pillars. Can you describe what you think is most important? If you were talking to a candidate, if you were talking to voters, what do you see as essential here?
I think it's education reform. I know that doesn't surprise you, Jeff, all the conversations we have, you know, offline about this. I think that the surest path to more equal and more equitable prosperity for all Michigan citizens is an improved and excellent public education system. And to a lesser extent, greater equity in healthcare.
Yeah. You know, and Rachel Stewart, who was on just with us a few minutes ago, talked about the Mississippi miracle, right? That there are other states that have changed their trajectory in education, like Mississippi, that's gone from 49th to 9th in fourth grade reading. You know, we heard from Dr. Kerry Wright, who led that change in Mississippi, now is leading a change as well in Maryland. In November at our signature event, what did you take away from what she told us there?
The biggest takeaway for me was the importance of consistency. Consistency among all key stakeholder communities that weigh in together to drive the direction of these kinds of big changes that, you know, you want to see in any state, whether you're talking about, you know, tax reform or education policy reform or economic development policy reform. You have to get, you know, elected officials, the business community, community stakeholders to work together across all kinds of lines, you know, political, economic, and other, urban, rural, all of that, and get everybody rowing the boat in the same direction. And what we've seen from the data in Mississippi and what we've heard from Dr. Wright's comments is that when a community, in that case, an entire state, does that, for 15, 20 years, you can get, you know, seemingly remarkable results. You know, what we see over, what we heard her say is, you know, it's really not a miracle.
Yeah.
It's just everybody got down to business and stayed with it.
She called it more of a marathon than a miracle, right?
Yes.
And I think she talked about, you know, in year one, year two, you may not see a big change. And that doesn't mean you change direction, doesn't mean you change strategy. You've got the right curriculum, you've got the right training for teachers, and you keep moving forward.
Right.
So it's and I think the key here is, right, it's very possible. It's
Absolutely.
Not out of our control in Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mississippi is getting all the attention in the moment, and, you know, the dramatic change in their numbers is worthy of that. But you get into the data in this space, and there are lots of other examples about it, right? Massachusetts started decades ago. Tennessee has had tremendous reforms. Maryland, even to a lesser extent, Florida. And so you've seen some of this in lots of states. And the parts of it that are consistent is, again, key stakeholders kind of grab hands and say, we're going to work past our normal differences, and everybody's going to compromise to get to a mostly good solution that we can all live with, and we're going to stay with it.
Governor Whitmer invited you to speak at her literacy summit last month, and we've heard a lot of other candidates starting to talk about education. Do you think the conversation in Michigan is changing?
I do, and I'm excited about that. And I think, frankly, we owe a lot of that to your leadership in this space, Jeff, and your, you know, leadership of the organization here over the last, you know, half decade or so. You know, I started working at Business Leaders in 2015. That was when my dad kind of handed off the reins to me, both at Bridgewater Interiors and in organizations like this. And so that's kind of how long I've been at the table trying to help with this conversation. And it's really in recent years that I feel like a range of elected leaders, again, across parties, different levels, right? House, Senate, gubernatorial candidates, the governor herself, you know, are not just saying, yes, I hear you, but then turning to their, you know, public bullhorns and saying, okay, I'm getting that we really have to move this forward.
Yeah.
And I'm really encouraged by that. And I think that, you know, this is going to be an exciting year with the election coming up in the fall and, you know, so much criticality that I think everybody is appreciating.
Yeah, and we have to give credit too for Launch Michigan, which we sit on the board of, both of breaking down some of those silos between business and labor and others. Final question.
So changing gears a little bit, Ron, tomorrow's a big day with the auto show starting. What are some of the top trends that you see coming in the auto and advanced technology industry?
I think the coolest things that are happening are not things, unfortunately, maybe for the auto show, that consumers can really see. There's exciting stuff happening in lightweighting, in making manufacturing processes more environmentally sustainable, and especially in trying to streamline logistics and supply chains. That's really exciting stuff.
Should be a fun time ahead.
I hope so.
Well, Ron, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your leadership in the business community and in our state overall. Again, this is Jeff Donofrio alongside Ryan Goldberg here at WJR, filling in for Paul W. Smith at the Detroit Economic Club luncheon today at the Motor City Casino. We'll be right back after the break with Garrick Rochow, the CEO of Consumers Energy. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio, President and CEO of Business Leaders for Michigan, joined again by my co-host Ryan Goldberg, President and CEO of DFCU Financial. We're talking to folks about economic outlook, about the state of the economy in Michigan. We're hearing, of course, here at the Detroit Economic Club at the Motor City Casino from experts around what we can expect in 2026 from the economy. And joining us now is Garrick Rochow, who is the CEO of Consumers Energy. Garrick, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your work and all you do for our state.
Ryan, Jeff, it's a pleasure to be here today.
So, Garrick, couple things from my perspective. So, 26 is going to be a big year for Michigan. We've got a major election for sure. Energy continues to be a hot topic across the state, whether it's locally in the Detroit area all the way up to the Upper Peninsula. Your team at Consumers, how would you characterize your short-term focuses?
Yeah, I shared with our board of directors here recently, finally we're the popular kids at the dance. Like, that never happened in high school. I was never the popular kid, but finally, you know, energy is top of mind and about every topic that I hear. And so And we've got a really great opportunity. I would put it as a once-in-a-generation opportunity, particularly with data centers and being able to serve data centers and the energy required for those. You know, other states are winning that opportunity. In Michigan, we're not, just to put things simply, and I think we have an amazing opportunity. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there, so we're spending a lot of time correcting things about what that means. And I can say with certainty, it's not going to cost residential customers a penny with the data centers, with data center contracts, in the building these data centers. In fact, we filed, and then getting way in the weeds here, we filed back in February with the Michigan Public Service Commission a tariff to do just that, because we don't want our residential customers paying for it. And that was approved by our Public Service Commission here in Michigan in November, first couple weeks of November. And so I can say with great affirmation, residential customers will not pay for data centers. And so there's so much upside with data centers. And even today, Microsoft announced they're going to pay their fair share to be able to locate data centers throughout the U.S.
There's a lot of misinformation and myths out there. You know, you hear about water usage. You hear about, you know, that this is going to disrupt communities, that this investment is just unwelcome in certain places. I mean, What are you hearing, and maybe what are the things you want to make sure people understand beyond the fact that this is not going to cost residents any more, you know, on their electric bill?
Look, this AI opportunity is a once in a generation. They're going to build these facilities. They'll operate these facilities. This is here for the long time. Every time we're using a device, we're going to be touching AI in some way or the other. And we can miss out on that opportunity, or we can make the most of it. And I think that's where that's why I frame it as a once in a generation opportunity to locate some data centers in the state. And I think we can do that very responsibly, from water usage, from electric usage. But just put this in perspective. In one area, we're working with one of these hyperscalers, just one of their facilities. It changes the tax base by 25%. Think what that means for that community. Yeah.
For the schools.
For the schools, for the roads. It could reduce the property tax burden in that area. And unfortunately, we're not having that conversation of just the benefit. And when we think about families, we think about jobs, we think about affordability in terms of our tax burden, I think it's just a great opportunity for Michigan.
Yeah, we had this debate about how do we make sure we find more money to fix the damn roads over the last 8 years, right? And a lot of that is because we aren't seeing the growth that other states are, that these places like Florida, that Texas, you know, they're getting that investment, they're getting the population that are paying the taxes there that support that infrastructure, right?
Yeah. I'm not making this political, but if you go back to 2000, so over the last 25 years, professional jobs, so think accountants, engineers, attorneys, have not grown in Michigan. Yeah. Where across the U.S., it's grown by 30%. Manufacturing jobs have declined by 40% over that same window, and that's doesn't matter, Republicans or Democrats, we've lost out in Michigan, and I think there's a real opportunity to put Michigan back on the map for economic growth and development.
So you sit on the Business Leaders for Michigan board. You're engaged in many economic development organizations around the state. You are probably talking to more people who are looking to invest across the country or looking to expand here in Michigan. What are they telling you, and what do you think is the most important thing for us to focus on to be more competitive?
Well, the biggest term is they say it's hard to do business in Michigan. We're attracting, well, I'll look at it both ways. We want the small corner shop to grow, and we want manufacturing to grow. Whether you're in the state now, or we want to attract you to the state. But I'll tell you, when we're trying to attract companies to the state, they say it is hard to do business in Michigan. And there's a lot of different factors. But if that's the entry, if that's the front door, it's just hard to do business. We have to change things. And I think that's the important work of Business Leaders for Michigan. There's a lot of great regional economic development organizations in the state that are doing important work to attract. We've got more engineers per capita than any other state. We've got a great aerospace. Most people don't know about our aerospace industry in the state and defense industry. So there's a lot of good, but like Michigan's policies, we've got a name for it, the Michigan 180. Yeah. You have economic development policies in the state, and they flip. And if you're going to invest in the state, whether you're here already or you want to locate, it's really hard because we keep changing our mind.
Yeah, certainty, predictability, understand that I have a shot clock of I've put an application in for a permit or something else, and I know how long that's going to take. Those are all really critical. And, you know, so making it easy to build, easy to grow. But it's also not just about that construction or investment, right? It's affordability, too.
It is affordability. And, you know, one of the things that I often talk, I'm just going to talk my own shop here and talk about electric. What is an electric rate? It's cents per kilowatt hour. And we have an electric system. We have an electric system that still has capacity in that system. And so if the cents stay the same and I put more kilowatt hours as the denominator in there, like, that rate goes down. And I think that's what people miss about economic development. When there's a thriving economy, when there's good jobs and new homes, new families located in the state, it really can be a place where there's great economic growth. And we can do that in an affordable way.
Makes it more affordable for everybody. And that's not just about energy. It's housing. It's, you know, about infrastructure generally, how much we pay to, register our vehicles, those types of things.
Absolutely.
And, Garrick, one of the things that we look at for the health of the economy is just the strength of the consumer. You've mentioned throughout the discussion some of the initiatives, the data centers, and not passing any of that cost through to increase the cost for the residents. Generally, from a consumer health standpoint, what are you all seeing within the company?
Well, it's, you know, there's certain affordability is real. The cost of living is real. And I think affordability means something different for you. It means something different for me. It means something different for all the residents in Michigan. And so really it's meeting people where they're at. And that's why we have a number of programs for us to help with that affordability. Just yesterday, we announced $5 million we were given to agencies to help those in need across the state to help with their utility bills and other challenges from an affordability perspective. Our energy waste reduction or energy efficiency programs have saved customers over $6 billion over the last few years by reducing the cost by using less energy in their homes. Think the thermostat, think the lights, those types of things. We have a whole bunch of rebates to do that. So there's a variety of programs to make things more affordable. But again, the biggest mover we can do is economic growth and development. Mm-hmm. When you share that fixed cost across the system with more people, it helps from an affordability perspective.
Well, it really, really shows that you're customer-centric. So Congrats on what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Garrick, really appreciate the work you're doing to make sure that we can grow in the state, that you're a warrior for our state in terms of bringing new jobs and investment here. Garrick Rochow is President and CEO of Consumers Energy. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We will be right back. This is Jeff Donofrio, and along with my co-host, Ryan Goldberg. Stay with us. We'll talk more about economic growth in Michigan and how to make Michigan a better state. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio here at the Motor City Casino alongside Ryan Goldberg, the president and CEO of DFCU Financial. We're talking economic forecasts. We're talking about the state of Michigan, the city of Detroit, and we've got one of the most important people to the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan on the line, Jared Fleischer, who is the CEO of Bedrock. Jared, thanks for joining us.
Jeff, I'm here at the blackjack tables. I don't see you.
I'm just at the roulette down the hall. If you take a look.
All right.
Are you winning is the question.
Always, sir.
Always winning. Well, you're certainly winning with that new Hudson's development. Man, we were there this morning for breakfast. It is beautiful, and it is going to be the centerpiece and showpiece for, I think, a lot of the activities of GM this week during the auto show, bringing the world to Detroit. Talk about what's happening at the Hudson's development, and talk about what's next for Bedrock.
We couldn't be more excited, man. You said it really is a stunning building. This is a really exciting week for us. General Motors is moving in. It's truly becoming their new world headquarters. And what a week to do it, not only moving in, you know, hundreds of their team members, but coinciding with Auto Show Week. Kicked off, this morning with the Detroit Free Press breakfast there. And it's just so cool, man, to go into this incredible event space we have there. And, it was built to accommodate, cars. Dan had the foresight to build a car elevator into it, so you walk in and you got all of GM's kind of most advanced vehicles. What a great setting for a conference. Roger Penske and Mark Royce headlined it this morning. Just an exciting week at Hudson's and an exciting week for the city.
And did I hear that you have the big skylight you've built into the building too, and I heard today that maybe it was a replica of a headlight of one of the GM vehicles?
It was, and if you were talking to my head of architecture, he could tell you if it was a 57 Chevy or what it is, but it certainly is that, actually, if my memory serves, I think it's a 54 Corvette headlamp, but that is the skylight design for the atrium, the office space that is, GM's New World headquarters and soon going to host the Gilbert Family Foundation, the Gilbert Family Office, and Van Johnson Law, and J.P. Morgan. But it's this beautiful, it's curved office space all around an open atrium, incredible amenities. Just, we think, you know, the best office space in the state of Michigan.
Jared, it's Ryan Goldberg. It's good to be with you. First and foremost, congratulations on being named the CEO recently. You're off to a fast start.
Yes, sir. No other option.
The thing I think our listeners would be interested in is hearing about your thoughts on redevelopment of the Rinsen and Detroit's riverfront.
I appreciate you asking, man, because it's incredibly important to us, and we think the future of the city. And I really like to put it kind of in the biggest perspective. So, you know, when Dan came down here in 2010, you know, the city was in a lot of trouble. Here we are 15 years later, top 50 place to visit according to Time Magazine, USA Today, Travel and Leisure, one of the great comeback stories in American history. It took a village, you know, for our part. Dan, I think, was a singular spark and source of fuel in that. But for the last 10 to 15 years, we really did that along the Woodward Corridor, right? You know, with Hudson's as a centerpiece. And what, you know, Dan is saying is I'm prepared to double down and, you know, have the same kind of impact over the next decade on the riverfront. But to start that and make that possible, you know, you can't redevelop the riverfront in the shadow of a dying Renaissance Center. We need to reimagine the Renaissance Center. That is such a beast of a project that it can't be done without a smart public-private partnership. But if we can do that, not only will we turn, you know, the pretty obsolete, you know, Renaissance Center into something really special and bring housing and reinvigorate the hotel and create great public space, not only will we do that, but we'll go from there and build the best family-friendly waterfront district in the country right on Detroit's riverfront.
Yeah, and I've heard it equated to the Navy Pier in Chicago, some of the fantastic developments that have been happening around the country, whether that's in New York City and San Francisco. What is that going to look like if it comes to fruition here?
Yeah, so honestly, those are our inspirations. You mentioned Navy Pier in Chicago, which attracts, you know, 10 million people a year. Chelsea Pier in New York City. Seattle, over the past decade, has built on the success of its public market, that iconic public market, and transformed its entire waterfront. Those are our inspirations. We want to kind of take the best from each of them and, you know, build really the best in class in the country, heck, in the world. We know that we want a couple of major demand generators to be part of this. So, you know, a couple of really signature aspects that we're not quite ready to announce yet. But that, you know, really are, that's the reason that I'm going down to the riverfront. And then once you're there, there's going to be a ton of, you know, shopping and dining, you know, all around it, and great public space around it. So we know we want a couple of major anchors. And the other thing that we know we want, if it's possible, is we want to actually engage the water. All right, we don't want to stop at the water's edge. We want to truly see if we can build piers, build marinas, so that this, you know, unique location right on the river can actually engage with the water. We're in a state with a great maritime tradition. People, you know, love their boats, love their marinas, love their piers. We really want to try to figure that out. And we think if we put all that together, major anchors, engage the water with, you know, retail and shopping and restaurants and bars and music and housing, then we have something really special on our hands.
Jared, we've got about 30 seconds here. You know, all the restaurant and retail that's really blossomed in Detroit, you know, what should a listener check out? What's your go-to spot?
Oh, my God, there are so many. So the answer is just come downtown or go to pretty soon we're going to be launching a great resource. Right now it's deckedoutdetroit.com. We've got some other things in the works to basically, you know, help folks leverage digital technology to understand all the offerings down here. But just come down here. You can't go wrong. You look left, you look right, you're going to find something.
Jared, thank you so much for joining us. Exciting things happening in downtown Detroit, and you're at the center of virtually all of that. Appreciate your leadership and making Detroit and Michigan a better place. This is Jeff Donofrio, joined with Ryan Goldberg, President and CEO of DFCU Financial. We're here at the Detroit Economic Club, and we're going to be coming back in just a few minutes. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio sitting next to my co-host, Ryan Goldberg. We're talking about the economic forecast for Michigan here at the Detroit Economic Club at Motor City Casino. We've had some great conversations so far. We've talked about energy. We've talked about furniture industry. We've talked about downtown Detroit and development with Bedrock and their CEO, Jared Fleischer, just now. And we now are joined by Rich Homburg, the president and CEO of PBS here in Detroit. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. And a proud member of the board of the Detroit Economic Club.
Well, you and I both. Yeah, so we're both happy to support this great organization. I think this is one of the luncheons that is most anticipated of the year. It happens every January.
It's a milestone. And it's like stellar set crowd. Your year right now, right?
That's right. Yep. Well, there's a lot going on at Detroit PBS, and we're going to talk about it today. And it's a critical part of the infrastructure of our community. It helps bring light to areas of our economy and education and a whole bunch of other issues. You just named three new Board of Trustees members. You have a bunch of news you're making, I think, even today. So tell us about what's happening at Detroit PBS.
There's a lot going on, and obviously we've come through the federal funding challenge, and we plan a long time to be ready for a crisis, as you well know, Jeff. But we've come through that very well. The reaction we've had from this community has just been spectacular. We had 67,000 members a year ago. Today we have 80,000 members. People have stepped up magnificently to fund everything we're doing. We closed the gap this year, and now we go to work on how do we build the future. But through the partnerships and how we've rebuilt the station, and really, you know, we're partners with virtually every major organization in town. You see us a lot at the Mackinac Conference, obviously, and right here are great partners at the Detroit Economic Club. But today we are announcing a very significant partnership that I think will touch a lot of people's hearts and literally touch their souls, as we are announcing today a major partnership with Christ Church Cranbrook and a number of other organizations around issues of faith in Detroit and better understanding of faith in Detroit. The Lilly Foundation out of Indianapolis is supporting this effort. Christ Church brought us in, and we've been working on the plan for about 6 months now with Reverend Danaher, just spectacular people. Yeah. How do we better understand each other and the role of religion and how we all see faith and how much it's changed, how young people see faith, how church attendance has changed. We've spent the past about 5 years working with the Black Church Leadership Group and understanding the importance of churches in the Black community, but in every community. So where is faith today, and how do we think about that, and how do we get a more shared understanding of that? But it goes to what we are as an organization. How do we partner with the community, understand issues, and how help we drive common understanding of those issues?
I was going to say that common understanding in a very polarized world that we see. It's us versus them. It's red versus blue. It's, you know, so many divisions that people are kind of gravitating to, but bringing us together, finding the common touch points, the touchstones that allow us to have conversations about what we care about together, really important. So thank you for that work.
Well, it's absolutely there. I think you have enough coverage of the crisis in every area of society.
Yeah.
How about if we try to bring as much energy as we can to driving understanding? What do we have in common?
That's right. It's amazing when you get opponents together and you start talking about, well, what can we agree on? Exactly. There's usually a lot.
Absolutely. When you look at our state's literacy challenges, when you look at employment, when you look at higher ed, there's a lot of work to be done. But if we slow it down and say, let's get this done together, that's not a foolish notion. I'm not naive. It's hard work, as you know, Jeff.
No doubt.
Rich, you referenced in the early part of your remarks the federal funding cuts. So give us a sense of what that looks like and how would you go about making up some of that shortfall that exists now?
Well, about 15% of our revenue came from the federal government, and equally important, there were some foundational services, infrastructure, emergency services, rights to music and things like that were provided out of D.C. That funding has gone away. For us, it was about 15% of our funding. We had to make some changes internally, but we're also in a big city, and as I always say, in TMICIA, we operate in service to the most important city in America, Detroit. Think about the Upper Peninsula. We have 4 million people that we serve in Southeast Michigan. They may have 500,000.
Yeah.
We have one transmitter on our TV side. They have five. They've got bigger infrastructure challenges, smaller populations. The biggest impact of the federal funding cuts will be rural and the distant rural communities that are going to struggle. But we've built a Michigan Learning Channel. We're in business basically with all six stations in the state. We're meeting now on a regular basis to talk about how do we solve this together. We have almost a perfect map of station. Detroit, Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, the Central Michigan, and then Northern Michigan University. The entire state has service provided by PBS stations. How about if we work together? We've been doing that now for about 7 years.
You know, we were just talking to Rachel Stewart, the CEO of Gardner White, who brought Astora to downtown Detroit. We talked to Jared Fleischer about the Hudson's building and all that Bedrock is doing and the energy you feel here in the city. You just brought your headquarters back down to the city. Talk about that.
Well, you look for a long time for the perfect look. What we discovered over time was it's not just a building, it's a convening space. Come to our building and the partnerships that we've built. So if you think about how do we bring in the entire region, how do you bring in Monroe, how do you better serve Macomb, how do you build a facility that can bring the community into it? Think about the crossroads of I-75 and I-94, an incredible building that we were able to purchase, 120 parking spots outside, 50,000 square feet, and we are building what we're a community hub that will house the public television station, the WRCJ, the public radio station that serves classical music. So we're very excited about that. Come to our place and let's do this together.
Well, when can we visit is the question.
As soon as I get the funding done. Yeah. I've been dealing with this other thing.
But
we are in the midst of a capital campaign, and we expect to break ground at the end of the first quarter. But a lot of work to be done, obviously.
So speaking of funding, what can our listeners do to support the future of PBS and in general public broadcasting?
Well, listen, watch, and get invested in the station. People come to us for things that are important to them. So if your love is around the environment or travel or British dramas, watch the station, but become a member, obviously. But also become part of what we talk about members, but we also talk about subscribers. How do we bring together communities? We're doing a lot of work around the issue of caregiving. We're doing, obviously, a ton of work around faith. We're doing a lot of work around the environment and the importance of the Great Lakes and the automotive industry. How do we bring you into that work and be worth your time and worth your investment and then become a member and use Passport? I'm not allowed to say that it's the Netflix of public television, but some people have said that. So get involved with the station.
So you're just repeating what you heard. Right?
And by now, when we're getting it right, support us. When we're getting it wrong, call us. You know, we are very, very committed to listening to the community and responding to them.
What's your favorite program for listeners to check out right now?
The News Hour. Because every night at 6, a balanced 1 hour deeper conversation. If you're finished with the argument on either side or all sides, come to the PBS NewsHour and listen to a very balanced newscast that is dig in and understand the issues.
All right, so 6 o'clock tonight, we're gonna tune in. Rich, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for the work that you do in our community, and for bringing us together for those common touchstones. Rich Homburg, president and CEO of Detroit PBS. This is Jeff Donofrio, president and CEO of Business Leaders for Michigan, alongside Ryan Goldberg, president and CEO of DFCU Financial here at the Detroit Economic Club. We will be back in just a few minutes with some engaging conversation around Michigan's economic future. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio sitting next to Ryan Goldberg. We are here at the Detroit Economic Club talking about Michigan's economic outlook for 2026. Fresh off the panel that included MEDC CEO Quentin Messer, which we're going to hear from in just a few minutes, Gabe Ehrlich from the University of Michigan, an economist who's got great insight into where our state is, where it's headed. But with them was a wonderful leader in the automotive industry, Mary Buchziegler, CEO of Lucerne International, who is joining us here today. Mary, thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mary, it is an important week for Detroit. Obviously, we have the auto show happening just down the street here in the city of Detroit. But last week was an important, conference for the automotive industry and really our economy overall. It was CES in Vegas.
Yes.
You were out there. You
was.
Saw some of the great innovations. What'd you take away? What's coming back to Michigan?
You know, it was really interesting. First of all, if you've never been to CES, it is gigantic. It takes up the entire convention center, plus some of the Sands and Venetian. So if you ever go, you have to give yourself a lot of time and wear comfortable shoes and plan your days out. You know, I was really blown away by the amount of humanoid robots, and that seemed to be the talk of the town in Vegas. And you saw Hyundai actually came out and made that announcement that I think they're going to, they plan to make 38,000 units by, I think it was 2030. I could have those numbers wrong, but it was a big announcement. Of course, with their acquisition of, is it Boston, Boston Electronics. So.
Okay, yeah.
So the humanoid robots really, I think, stole the show more than anything there.
When you look at that, because I'd seen some projections that this could be more than a $30 billion industry in just a few years, are we going to see these robots in our houses, or is it really going to start maybe in business and commercial applications, industry?
I wish I had that crystal ball to tell you. I think it's really interesting. So I've been going to CES now for many years, probably the better part of 10, 15 years. And in years past, you go and you see this technology, and you think, oh, this is so cool. And then a couple years later, it's just part of your everyday life.
Right.
And the way that we're exponentially getting faster with bringing technology to market, I really think that humanoid robot, that industry is just going to skyrocket. And now, whether we're going to have them in our house, we're going to have enough trust, what level of complexity they're going to be at, who knows? There was some pretty cool displays and things that we saw. There was a fighting robot, a dancing robot, a robot that made you coffee, a dog robot. I mean, you name it. You could see robots everywhere.
Well, gosh, I mean, how many of us would have said we'd be using ChatGPT every day, just a year or two ago?
Right?
And that democratization of technology, of these new innovations, it is happening at a pace.
Fast, yeah. ChatGPT, I feel like I haven't graduated kindergarten unless I read my ChatGPT. I can't even write an email without using ChatGPT now. It's crazy.
Oh, Mary, for those that might not be familiar with Lucerne, give the listeners a little more info about your company.
Sure. So Lucerne International, we've been around since 1993. My father actually started Lucerne in 93. And we have been in the contract manufacturing space. I took the business global in 2003, and we started manufacturing more and more offshore. So it is a global business. We mostly now focus on cast, forged, and machined parts in the chassis, powertrain, and body structural. In we're diversifying now a little bit. So talk about the humanoid robots, talk about the drones, the eVTOLs. There's lots of opportunity in that space. So we're really looking hard to break into that space.
I was going to say, for most business leaders, there's what keeps them awake at night is, how do I stay in front of that technology advancement? How do I make sure I'm utilizing the next new development faster than the competition, whether that be here or whether that be abroad? How is that playing out for Lucerne? I mean, how are you, it can't be a choice for you at this point. You've got to be ahead of the game in technological advancements.
Yeah, I think, like you said, every company really has to look at that, and it definitely keeps you up at night, not just the technological advancements inside of your company, for example, using AI, using, more robotics in production, but also staying ahead of that curve when it comes to what is that next industry, what can we be part of, what can we can continue to diversify into.
Do you see obviously within your own company you're seeing this technological change. Do you think the industry as a whole, especially the industry based here in Michigan, the auto industry, is keeping up with that change too?
When you say keeping up with, and my mind immediately goes to China.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, no, I don't think that we're keeping up nearly as much as we should be. I've spent a lot of time in China, and I'm amazed. Every time I go there, you get in these EVs, and it is like riding in a spaceship. They've got all the bells and whistles. The technology is unbelievable, the comfort level, and the price point. And they're just bringing product to market as fast as they can. And unfortunately, here in the U.S., we are lagging on that. And I think that'll start to catch up with us here pretty quick.
So if you look at some of the technological advancements, some of the experiences that you're seeing, are there some things that you feel like should be translated to policymakers and things that we need to adapt more rapidly relative to some of these obstacles and headwinds?
Well, we chose the path of shooting down EVs, which is the technology of the future that, quite frankly, the rest of the world is adopting at an extremely fast rate. And our policies here now are really pushing us to push EVs to the side and focus back into the old dogs of ICE vehicles, maybe a little bit towards hybrid. I think that our policies, unfortunately, are holding us back, and they're rewarding the old ways instead of bringing us into the future.
What's when you look at that, when you look at I worked for Ford Motor Company earlier in my career, and we said, you know, just give us a target, let us shoot for it, right? Have that certainty for us. How does that play out within industry when you're trying to make decisions? Do you feel like there's enough certainty that policymakers are giving the auto industry right now?
It's funny. I don't know if you've heard anything that we talked about in the panel before this, but that's the big word, uncertainty. Yeah. How do you make business decisions when you've got this policy whiplash, changing regulations all the time? We have uncertainty coming up with the USMCA renegotiations. We've got uncertainty still around tariffs. They change from day to day. And it's really hard to make decisions, especially capital decisions, in an environment like this.
Yeah. So last thing we wanted to get your opinion on is with the auto show starting, predictions for this year relative to the auto industry.
For the auto show itself?
Just the industry.
The industry in general.
Yeah.
I'm cautiously optimistic. And the wait and see kind of field right now. Again, we've got big negotiations coming up with the USMCA that could drastically change the industry. We see a lot of investments coming in right now, and I think that depending again on what happens at the state level, what happens with midterms, what happens moving forward, there unfortunately still is a lot of uncertainty, but I am always that glass half full kind of person.
What would you tell, we've got a lot of folks running for office, whether it's midterm elections this year nationally or whether it's office in Michigan, what would you say those policymakers should be focused on?
I think that there's some really outstanding issues that need to be addressed. Just from a basic level, we've got labor issues, labor shortage issues. Michigan's falling behind in the labor race. I think we're now 40th somewhere in there, the per capita income, so we're well below the national 40th. Average. And it has to be addressed really at the ground level from an educational standpoint. And we have to, you can't start from the top. We've got to reinvest in our people, and we need to focus on bringing our people up and retaining that talent. That's a big issue.
Well, it's like you're a board member at Business Leaders for Michigan because you're singing from our songbook.
Love it.
We really appreciate your leadership in the auto industry, your leadership in Michigan. Mary Buchsieger, thank you so much for being with us here today, CEO of Lucerne International. This is Jeff Donofrio and Ryan Goldberg joining you from the Detroit Economic Club Michigan Economic Outlook Forecast, this luncheon today at the Motor City Casino. We've got a lot more coming up. Quentin Messer is from Michigan Economic Development Corporation. We'll be up next, so join us after the break. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio sitting next to Ryan Goldberg, CEO of DFCU Financial. We are talking Michigan's economic forecast. We're in a room here at the Motor City Casino at the Detroit Economic Club luncheon, filled with business leaders, community advocates who are focused on Michigan's future. And joining us is Quentin Messer, the CEO of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Just for those of you who can't see Quentin like I can, he's wearing a yellow Michigan Tech Huskies hat, and so representing from way in the UP there. Quentin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Quentin, you're the CEO of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. I'm sure a lot of us have worked with you for the number of years you've been here who know about it, MEDC, but maybe back up and tell us, for our listeners, what is an economic development system doing for our state, and what's MEDC's role?
No, it's a great question. I think it's really simple. Our organization is a quasi-state agency that's focused on growing Michigan's economy, full stop. And we are tasked with executing the state's economic development strategy, which is rooted in the fact that no place in North America does deep tech or hard tech better than Michigan, meaning no place knows how to make complex things better than Michiganders. So the Make It a Michigan economic development strategy has three pillars. We have to attract and develop talent or people. We have to cultivate and revitalize places. And then we have to compete for and win projects. And what it means, companies of all sizes need to decide that Michigan is the place they want to invest not only their talent, but also their capital expense dollars.
You know, if we're in a competition every day, right, with not just the 49 other states, you know, but globally. And
yes.
Really, an economic development system is here to assist Michigan in landing that next set of investments, those high-paying jobs. What would happen if we didn't have you around?
Well, I mean, look, I think that you need to have companies are every day, companies of all sizes are focused upon making payroll, growing their pipeline, making sure that they can reduce their accounts payable, all those things. They need someone who's outside the day-to-day function of business. And what are the policy environment? Is government getting out of the way? Is government speeding up permitting? Is government allowing companies to realize their best potential because they're making it easier to hire workers, or they're helping companies identify ways to solve childcare costs? So I think it would be incredibly negative, but I never want to get it twisted. Government doesn't create jobs. It's the entrepreneurial risk takers who do. And what government can do is accelerate and make it easier for those risk takers to do so.
So, Quentin, given your priorities that you just shared, as you look at 2025, what are some of the big successes or wins that you'd be most proud of?
Now, that's a great question. So I think there are really three things. I think, one, our ability to bring back so many properties and commercial parcels that had been off of the tax roll for decades across both peninsulas in many of our 83 counties, bringing them back, whether it's creating housing, providing amenities, really revitalizing community, creating that sense of place that's made Michigan special. That's number one. Number two was we continue to see impressive growth and bringing and welcoming not only new investment, but Michigan businesses continuing to elect to grow here. I think it's retaining the business that's arguably better than attracting new business. I'm a big sports analogy, a sports guy, and I will tell you, you talk to Coach Winningham or Coach Fitzgerald, any football coach, they'll tell you, you got to win the recruiting battle in your own backyard. And I think we've done that. There's still a lot of work to do. And I think the final thing is we've improved our customer service. There's still work to do, but I think we have increased our speed to match the speed of business. As I said, government can't be a retardant to businesses. And we all know that most businesses will tell you the number one thing they're focused on right now is speed.
Yeah. I mean, you know, how do you, we just had Garrick Rochow on, the CEO of Consumers Energy. You know, he talked about how do you make it easier to build and grow in this state? How do you mm-hmm. make it easy to invest, right? How do you, you know, going back to that old adage of hit the easy button. And, you know, so your role in doing that is important. You know, talk about maybe some of the challenges. And you know, there's been a lot of concerns with growth sometimes locally. Data centers are really something that a lot of folks are focused on talking about. There's a lot of myths out there about what will happen here. And there's a lot of growth that Michigan is missing. Can you talk about data centers and, you know, how you're approaching it, what you see for the state there?
So that's a great question. I think one is we have to always make the affirmative case as to why growth is good for communities. I think we cannot presume that every community understands that, because I think a lot of people have sort of said, hey, look, you know, we have made our peace with who we are. And I think when you try to introduce something new into the element like a data center, there can be misperceptions. So we have to get alignment on the fact base. Michigan's policy, no policy is ever perfect, but if you talk to people, I've talked to competitors, I've talked to investors in data centers across the country, when you look at how do you use power responsibly without reducing rates for residential customers, when you look at water and using recycled water, we have the advantage climatically that it is probably, because of our temperature, it's going to be a little bit cheaper to keep these data centers cool. And also, how do you construct building without disrupting traffic patterns and things of that nature have been thoughtfully done. And you know, as you look at sort of the tax mitigations and things of that nature, they always require local approval. And frequently what we're seeing companies say is, look, we want to make this investment in Michigan for Michigan's location advantage, A, proximity to higher education and talent. And third, we really believe that Michigan has an opportunity to really grow in sectors that are going to be very dependent on AI, whether it be in autonomous mobility, whether it be in aerospace and defense, whether it be in fintech. And I think having leaders like Garrett and his counterpart at DTE are going to be critically important, because we have Enlightened Energy Strategy, which is an important precursor to have a successful data center strategy that benefits everyone.
I mean, it's important from something that he said, which is they're guaranteeing, you know, in these agreements that consumer prices won't be increased by a data center coming in. I know that's been a concern of a lot of folks.
Yes.
So as you work with those companies, making sure you're addressing, as you said, there's nothing ever perfect, but making sure you're trying to address any of the questions or the pitfalls really helps that development.
No, you're right. And I think what happens is, and I think companies are getting wiser about this, is that companies understand that it's harder to disabuse people of notions once they have it than to educate up front. And so we're seeing more and more companies sort of say, okay, here's our identity, and we're ready to come and work alongside communities to make this beneficial for everyone.
So, Quentin, congratulations on being named Michigan Chronicle's Power 50 list.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that recognition, maybe what it means personally to you.
Well, I'm grateful for Hiram Jackson and his entire team at Michigan Chronicle. It really means that you're part, and it's really not about me. It's about my 300-plus colleagues at the MEDC who lift me up, empower me to go and have the best job, I would argue, in economic development, and maybe in the world. I get to be an ambassador for Michigan, and I'm just grateful for Hiram and his team, and with the 49 other people, I hope to grow into the honor.
Well, Quentin, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for being a public servant here for Michigan and fighting for our state to land jobs, land investment. Quentin Messer, president and CEO of MEDC. This is Jeff Donofrio. Joining me is Ryan Goldberg, my co-host. We're filling in for Paul W. Smith at the Detroit Economic Club here at the Motor City Casino. We've got a final guest, Gabe Ehrlich, who's going to tell us about where the economy is, where it's going. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Well, welcome back. This is Jeff Donofrio, president and CEO of Business Leaders for Michigan, joined with my co-host, Ryan Goldberg, CEO and president of DFCU Financial. We're here talking about the state, talking about the economic outlook of Michigan. Detroit Economic Club is just wrapping up its luncheon, that forecast for 2026, where the state is going. We've been hearing from CEOs, business leaders. We've heard from Quentin Messer, the head of MEDC. And now we get the oracle from Ann Arbor, Gabe Ehrlich, who is an economist from University of Michigan. Gabe, you've been doing this for now a number of years, providing us an outlook into what's ahead, where the state is today. Tell us what's happening in Michigan.
Yeah, the incoming numbers have been painting a pretty puzzling picture. There's a couple of different ways of measuring employment in Michigan. They're telling totally different stories. I won't bore you with all of the details. You take an average, and it looks like slow but positive growth recently. I actually think I would take the slight under on where the momentum is right now. But, we do expect growth to pick up through the course of the year. So on a calendar year basis for 2026, flat employment here in Michigan, but with growth picking up over the course of the year in the back half of the year and, you know, leading into a positive 2027.
So you're going to talk to policymakers, I believe it's Friday, right?
That's right.
About where the state's economy is going. What's going to be your advice to them on how to keep that slow but steady and picking up growth?
Yeah. You know, some of the positive things that we see as we move forward, you know, for Michigan, first off, I do have to point out recent changes to tariff policy have become more supportive for domestic auto manufacturing. Mm. So, you know, if you look back to 2025, early in the year, you know, we said at the time, listen, these tariffs are going to be a net negative for the auto industry domestically, you know, here in the United States. There have been some changes that we think have improved the situation substantially, so that's a plus. Still will add costs to auto, so we do expect the tariffs to boost prices about $3,000 per year on average. So not a winner necessarily in terms of affordability, but should boost production here in the United States. So that, you know, should all else equal help Michigan. And then the financial penalties for missing the CAFE standards, corporate average fuel economy standards, have essentially been eliminated for the time being. That should boost Michigan's auto industry. There's obviously costs to that policy. My wife worked at the EPA for many years, so I have to point that out. Yeah. But you know, all else equal, that should help Michigan. We expect that to boost the Detroit 3's share of the market.
So if we look back at 25, Gabe, in as you came into the year, you had certain expectations, things you thought you would see. How did it end up relative to those thoughts?
Yeah, you know, listen, I think 2025 was a challenging year for Michigan's economy. You know, there was just so much uncertainty about how the policy landscape would shift. You know, obviously we saw a lot of shifts. And so I think overall I would say Michigan's economy hung in there pretty well, all things considered.
What, you know, Gabe, when we look at maybe some of the biggest headwinds, you talked about some of the tailwinds that we've got here. Yeah, if you were to say, you know, headwinds or maybe some risk factors, what would they be for Michigan?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I keep pointing to is uncertainty. You know, it just makes it really hard to make the tough decisions and pull the trigger on an investment or a big decision if you're a business. And so one thing, you know, that we have this year is renegotiating the USMCA agreement, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, or the new NAFTA. You know, and that's a big wild card. We don't know where that's going to go. And, you know, the auto industry relies on an integrated North American market. And so, you know, having that big wild card is definitely a risk factor. And then we see recently the attack on the Federal Reserve and its independence. You know, again, it's in a lot of ways we're already seeing that kind of that being toned down. But it raises questions of, okay, well, so where is policy going? Will we get more certainty this year?
Yeah, I mean, our listeners may hear something about that in the next 10 minutes.
That's right.
When President Trump joins the show and gives his speech here at the Detroit Economic Club. Let me ask you, you know, you talked about that integration between Canada and Mexico. How has that maybe been affected over the last year? I mean, what's some of the data or some of the analysis that you see? Because Michigan, you know, we have the busiest border crossing between in North America, mm-hmm. right here in Detroit, between Canada and the U.S. You know, we're highly dependent on this foreign trade.
That's absolutely right. You know, one thing I'll point out, it's not about the auto industry, it's actually about tourism. Mm. And, you know, you at least hear this anecdotally that, you know, our friends in Canada don't want to come and visit as much as they did in the past. You know, when you think about the relationship getting a little bit more adversarial, unfortunately, I think, you know, it's natural to think about. And so, you know, something that my co-panelist, Quentin Messer, said earlier was, you know, sometimes you've got to think about not just getting the best deal, but the long-term relationship. You know, these are our friends, our allies, and, you know, trying to maintain that relationship for the long run.
Yeah. Well, you know, Canada is, you know, certainly I think there's been tension there, right? There's been a lot of discussion cross-border, policymakers. We've seen some, maybe some imports that the United States has been, you know, desiring lately. A heated rivalry came out, right? It's been pretty popular in the United States, Canadian production. So that's, maybe that's going to bridge some of the gap. You know, when you look at, again, talking to policymakers, and they go to you often about what, you know, is maybe a risk, what is, you know, something that is something they could push into a little bit more and help spur growth, what would you tell them? What would you say to them?
You know, two things. One is, you know, we are so lucky in the United States to have the great institutions we have the predictability around the rule of law, around things like monetary policy. I already mentioned the Fed. And, you know, it's easy to take that for granted. But, you know, in lots of ways, that's the golden goose. So, you know, let's take care of that is the first thing I'd say. And just related, you know, it's a lot easier to tear something down than it is, you know, it takes a long time to build something. It can come apart more quickly.
Gabe, one of the things that we've seen over the last couple hours is different thoughts, viewpoints from CEOs within a variety of different industries that have been on the show today. If you think about guidance or advice that you could give that would be maybe general in nature that CEOs and folks running companies should be contemplating over the course of the year, what's high on your list?
Yeah, you know, as a macroeconomist, I think the first thing to say is it's easy to be a doomer. You know, that's how you get the headlines, right? But, you know, we are not forecasting a recession. There are tax cuts that are going to be hitting the economy that should provide a boost to growth. Yeah. So, that is one thing just I would put out there is, you know, the sky is not falling in terms of the macro economy. And so, you know, just to be mindful of that as you're planning.
And interest rates as you go forward, what are some of the catalysts? Generally, inflation is highly considered, employment. How are you looking at the data and what you may forecast regarding interest rates over the next year?
Yeah, we do expect longer-term rates to start coming down. They've already started coming down, but to come down just a little bit further, we're not expecting gigantic relief in terms of interest rates. Like you say, you know, inflation has been pretty stubborn. We're expecting local inflation to come in at around 3% this year. You know, the Fed targets inflation around 2%. So we are still seeing inflation a little bit above target. And that's part of why you see people at the Fed starting to talk about potentially pausing on rate cuts.
Gabe, thanks so much for joining us today, for giving us that insight, for your work here in the state of Michigan. We're glad to have you. Gabe Ehrlich from the University of Michigan.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's all that we have today for Focus with Paul W. Smith. This is Jeff Donofrio, President and CEO of Business Leaders from Michigan, joined by Ryan Goldberg, President and CEO of DFCU Financial, sitting in for Paul W. today. We've really had a good time, I think, right?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeff. It's been a pleasure to be your partner.
Well, stay tuned. President Trump's address is coming up in just a few minutes. Listeners can tune in right here on WJR. And with that, we'll say good afternoon.